everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of Extra Base Hit. This is the program that gets you caught up on anything and everything happening around the world of Major League Baseball. Coming up on this edition of the program, we have an interview with Ashley Curry. Ashley is an actress, filmmaker, director, and producer from Gastonia, North Carolina, and she's the director and producer of the short film Tony, Mamie, and Connie, which tells the story of Tony Stone, Mamie Johnson, and Connie Morgan, who were three black women who played in the Negro Leagues during the early to mid-1950s. On the program, we discuss Curry's upbringing in North Carolina, also her favorite Major League Baseball teams, her familiarity with the Negro Leagues. Also, we talk about the short film and much more. So stay tuned for that on this edition of the program. I want to start off with my top three storylines. I want to talk about the New York Mets. Now, if you've been listening to this show for a minute, you know that the New York Mets have been my favorite baseball team for a long, long time. It goes back as far as Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden and Howard Johnson, just to name a few. Well, the Mets have had a very rough first half of the Major League Baseball season. As this show is airing, they have been terrible in the month of June. They've only won 7 games and they've lost 18. And it has not been good at all. And a lot of these games that have been, they've lost have been very close. There have been injuries, but when you have two aces on the rotation, like a Justin Verlander and a Max Scherzer, you have to win more games. And they haven't gotten it done, especially on the offensive side as of late. However, Francisco Lindor has been hitting the ball well so far in this first half of the year. Brandon Nimmo has gotten some home runs as of late. That recently, Pete Alonso, their silver slugger, has been down with an injury. So my Mets have not been looking good, man. The team from Queens, not looking good at all right now. And there's been concerns from the team in Queens right now. You know, the Yankees have had their concerns dealing with Aaron Judge and that toe injury, which I'll get into a little bit later on. So the team from the Bronx having their issues with injuries, and the team from Queens having their issues, not just with injuries, but just with just all around play, just not getting it done, just losing a lot of close games, not able to finish strong. It's been a rough June for them. Like I was saying earlier, between the months of March and April, when the Major League Baseball regular season started, they had a record of 15-12. The month of May, they went 14-15. But June has been atrocious, as this show is airing currently with a record of 7-18. And there's a lot of concerns, not just from me being a Mets fan, but concerns from not just from Mets fans, but also just from people in the media and journalists that covered the New York Mets and covered Major League Baseball. And Steve Cohen, the owner of the New York Mets, wanted to get to the bottom of some things. Here's Mets owner Steve Cohen in a press conference. This is not the whole press conference, but just here he is touching on some key points, such as remaining with the core players that he has, also spending a lot of money to keep core players in Queens with the New York Mets. Here's owner Steve Cohen.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's been incredibly frustrating. I watch every game. I see what's going on, if you ask me, would I have expected us to be in this position at the beginning of the season, the answer is no. But here we are, and, hopefully we can right the ship, we have quality players. For some reason or another, they're not gelling. When we pitch well, we don't hit. When we hit, we don't pitch well. It's kind of weird. I mean, it's actually very strange to me. And I don't know if the players are anxious. I don't know if they're pressing. I mean, I assume that that's a little bit of that. We see a lot of mental errors that what I call enforced errors. Obviously we can clean that up. We've lost games because of it. And there's nobody to blame. And it's really across the whole team. And the problem is, we're really at, close to half the season. And so we don't have as much luxury of time as we have before. We still have time. I mean, I read something that said there was one team every year that came from 8.5 back in the last 4 years to make the wild card. okay? And so, you know, obviously we came in with higher hopes and, you know, making the last wild card or whatever, but that's where we are. And so the season's not over. I'm preparing my management team for all possibilities. You know, if we don't get better, you know, we have decisions to make at the trade deadline. And that's not my preferred end result. But, you know, I'm preparing all contingencies. And we'll see where it goes. It's on the players, right? I mean, they're veterans. They've been there before. I think they're, you know, these are, you know, players that have done it, and we'll see if they can get their act together and string together some wins. I can't pitch and I can't hit, okay? So that's the way it goes. And we're hoping for the best. Hey, listen, I mean, you know, I'm a patient guy, okay? Now, everybody wants, you know, a headline. Everybody says, fire this person, fire that person. But I don't see that as a way to operate. If you want to attract good people to this organization, the worst thing you can do is be impulsive, okay? And win the headline for the day and not, you know, overall, over time, attract, you know, you're not going to attract the best talent because they're not going to want to work for somebody who has a short fuse. And I know fans that, you know, they want something to happen. I get it. But sometimes you can't do it, you know, because you have long-term objectives. And that's the way it is. I've been clear from day one that I'm still looking for a president of baseball ops. Billy knows. I've had that conversation with him. He's supportive. You know, my view is this is a very complex job, and there's a lot to do, and it's a lot on one person. And so, I mean, obviously we have people under Billy, but from a leadership standpoint. And so, that's still out there. And we'll see. At some point, we will fill that position. And my view is, you know, Billy will be part of that. I've enhanced the management team, and that's the goal. And so I've been very patient. You know, the biggest mistake you can make is go hire somebody and set the organization back 5 years, 10 years. And so, you know, I've been waiting, and at some point, you know, we'll hire somebody. You know, I mean, in retrospect, let's assume this turns out to be a poor season. Yeah, in retrospect, you'd like to spend less, right? But you don't have that luxury when you're trying to put together a team, and that's the decision we made. Free agency is really expensive. Okay, if you want to field a good team from free agency, that's what it costs. If you want to field, you know, fill all the positions with hopefully quality players, okay? And sometimes you can get it right, and sometimes, you know, things go wrong, okay? I mean, it's a tough place to build a team, which is why I keep saying, and the goal here is to build up the farm system. Because ultimately, that gives you a lot more options. I mean, when we look at our pitching today, you know, we had to go out in free agency and get pitchers over the last couple of years. We haven't really developed that many pitchers, which is actually pretty shocking. I mean, we're certainly capable of doing it. You know, we may not have had the right infrastructure in place. We just opened up our pitching lab. Well, guess what? Other teams had pitching labs 6, 7, 8 years ago. And so we're behind. And so, the goal is to provide all the resources, all the infrastructure that makes us competitive with other teams. And then it's upon us to, you know, take those tools and use them and either pick good players and or make them better. And that's the goal, but that takes time. And so what else are you going to do? If you don't have them in the system, at least we have the luxury of going out and spending the money and get players. You know, fortunately, you know, this year has been, you know, not what I'd hoped it to be. But I'll say it again, the year's not over. And listen, there are little green shoots. Max is pitching better. Peterson, you know, obviously tough year. Came, you know, pitching like, looked like he pitched a lot better. He did good work down in the farm, and hopefully fixed what he needed fixing. And so, you know, there are reasons. Quintana comes back next week. So all is not lost yet, you know, but it's getting late.
All right, that audio was courtesy of the New York Mets. A couple of things that I have taken away from that soundbite that you heard from New York Mets owner Steve Cohen. Two things that he mentioned relentlessly in that soundbite: patience and time. Patience and time are two elements that do not work in New York at all, and they certainly do not work when you're dealing with the sports teams, whether it be Yankees, Giants, Jets, Rangers. You could say the New Jersey Devils, they play in the New York City metropolitan area. Any of the sports teams that play in the New York City area, patience and time are the two things that do not mix when it comes to New York. And certainly they do not mix in New York sports. And you heard Mets owner Steve Cohen saying, we have time. I don't know, man. I don't know. Like I said before, patience and time is something that's not stressed heavily in New York, and it's certainly something that has not worked in terms of dealing with the New York media and certainly dealing with New York sports. And there's a lot of pressure on this team, and you heard what Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, was talking about, spending a lot of money. They spent a lot of money. They spent a lot of money in the offseason to get Justin Verlander, also bringing in Max Scherzer. Jeff McNeil got an extension. So they've spent a lot of money, and also just a few years ago landing Francisco Lindor in that big trade from the Cleveland Guardians. So patience and time were two things that I had, my two takeaways from what Steve Cohen was talking about. And patience and time are two things that are not practiced in New York, and certainly they're not practiced when it comes to New York sports teams. They're going to have to get this thing fixed in a hurry, because on paper, this team is really good. If you look at the pitching rotation, as I mentioned earlier, of the two aces, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, and then you also have Carlos Carrasco as well. You've also got, of course, Pete Alonso. Pete just coming back from an injury. He's trying to get himself together. You've got Francisco Lindor. You've got Starling Marte, Brandon Nimmo. You've got Daniel Vogelbach, who's the designated hitter. You've got Jeff McNeil, one of the best hitters in the business, Mark Canha. So on paper, this team is really good. It's just that they're struggling. They're not getting the wins. And certainly Steve Cohen is talking about, we don't have much time, but we've got time. Well, they better get going, because Atlanta, Miami, Philadelphia are all currently in front of the Mets in the National League East as this show is currently airing. But bottom line is this. Steve is assuring that they won't make any changes in the foreseeable future. There's also been rumors about maybe getting rid of either Scherzer and Verlander, or getting rid of one of them. My thing is, keep both of them. You're going to need both of them, because remember, the Major League Baseball season is a marathon, not a sprint, a 162-game regular season. So can things change? Yes, things can change. Am I optimistic the Mets can get it done? Yes, I'm optimistic that the Mets can get it done, but they're going to have to get it fixed, and they're going to have to get it fixed in a hurry, because as I stated earlier, patience and time are two things that are rare in New York City, and it's certainly when you're dealing with New York sports, patience and time and dealing with New York sports fans, good luck. Good luck on that one. My next storyline is going to be the Oakland Athletics. What a storied franchise that the Oakland Athletics will, you know, have been, with all of the great names that have played for that franchise, like Reggie Jackson, Vida Blue, Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, Ricky Henderson, just to name a few, Raleigh Fingers to be exact. The Oakland A's were in an embodiment of not just the San Francisco Bay Area, but just the city of Oakland as a whole. And it really hurt my heart to find out this week, well, not this week, but as of recent, that the Oakland A's are packing up and going to be preparing to move to Las Vegas. This move was actually coming about for the last several years, but it's official now. The Oakland A's are planning to move to Las Vegas. Now, when the move had happened, a lot of Oakland A's fans went inside the Oakland Coliseum and they did a protest with the Athletics planning to move to Las Vegas. And just hours after the state of Nevada approved a move, a financial move to build a brand new stadium near the Las Vegas Strip for the brand new baseball team, Oakland A's fans held a reverse boycott at the Oakland Coliseum. So basically, in layman's terms, this is how it worked. Oakland A's owner, John Fisher, deciding to move the team to Las Vegas, and they plan to move the team by 2027. And the Nevada State Senate, they approved the new stadium for the A's. Matter of fact, it's going to cost $380 million. So long story short, the move was approved. The stadium is going to be built in Las Vegas. Oakland A's fans, in an outrage, they get to Oakland Coliseum where the A's currently play at, and they did a reverse boycott protesting the ownership of the Oakland A's, specifically John Fisher. And you know what? Bold move by Oakland A's fans. And for a team that has done that, was so prominent with that city and with the San Francisco Bay Area, let's just look at the city of Oakland as a whole for a moment. The Raiders, great for the city of Oakland. When they moved to L.A., devastating. When they came back to Oakland, it was great. Now they're moving to now they're in Las Vegas. They've been there for several years. Wow. Still, it's still kind of tough for me to say Las Vegas Raiders. It feels a little weird. But so you got the Raiders. They've been gone out of Oakland for a minute. The Warriors moved back across the Bay to San Francisco after so many years playing in Oakland, specifically at the Oracle Arena. And now you've got the Oakland A's getting ready to move to Las Vegas, which is going to happen within the next several years. The owner wants to be there by 2027. But bottom line is this, man, I'm with Oakland A's fans in the reverse boycott, showing their support and, you know, in frustration with what John Fisher did. Even the mayor of Oakland was prepared, and there was recent information that came out with the mayor of Oakland had said that, you know, she was willing to talk to the owner of the team, John Fisher, but there was no communication between him and the mayor and the Oakland City Council. And this is a bummer, man, because Oakland, you know, when you think of Oakland, it's blue-collar, working-class city. You think of the rich history of Oakland, not just with its sports teams, but even on the political front with the Black Panthers. I won't get in the political side of things, but bottom line is this. Kudos to Oakland Athletics fans for doing the reverse boycott at the Oakland Coliseum after finding out that the Nevada State Senate approved the brand new baseball stadium for the A's near the Las Vegas Strip. And of course, bad move by the owner of the team for not having conversation with the Oakland City Council, with the mayor to be exact. And, you know, again, I'm for the reverse boycott. I'm for fans, you know, not taking any crap from ownership, and which has done the A's such a disservice for a long time. And kudos to the Oakland A's. It's going to be a sad day when that move is official, when they have to leave Oakland and move to Las Vegas. And again, so many great players that have played for that franchise. I mentioned it earlier. I'm not going to mention it again, but tough day. But hey, Oakland A's fans, good job on showing your frustration with the reverse boycott. And for my last storyline, so yes, it's here. The All-Star Game is here, the 2023 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. The starters have been announced. The pitchers and the reserves will be announced later on. But for the National League, the starters are going to be starting off at catcher from the Atlanta Braves, Sean Murphy. At first base, from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Freddie Freeman. In base, representing the Miami Marlins, one of my favorite players, Luis Arraez. At third base, representing the St. Louis Cardinals, Nolan Arenado. At shortstop, representing the Atlanta Braves, Orlando Arcia. In the outfield, we have Ronald Acuna Jr., representing the Atlanta Braves, one of the top vote. He was actually the top vote getter for the National League. Also, we have Mookie Betts representing the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we have Corbin Carroll representing the Arizona Diamondbacks. And at the designated hitter position, we have J.D. Martinez from the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that takes care of the National League. Let's move over to the American League now. The starters for the American League at the catcher position, we have Yonah Heim representing the Texas Rangers. At first base, Yandy Diaz from the Tampa Bay Rays. At second base, we have Marcus Semien from the Texas Rangers. Also representing the Texas Rangers at third base, Josh Jung. And also at the shortstop position, representing the Texas Rangers, Corey Seager. In the outfield, we have Randy Arozarena from the Tampa Bay Rays. In the outfield, we have Aaron Judge from the New York Yankees and Mike Trout representing the Los Angeles Angels. And at the designated hitter position, what a first half of the year he's having representing the Los Angeles Angels, Shohei Ohtani. And by the way, Shohei was the top vote getter in the American League. So that takes care of your all-star starters, and it's going to be fun this year. This year's 2023 Major League Baseball All-Star Game is going to take place in Seattle, and Seattle's one of those special, not just sports cities, but one of those special cities as a whole. Check out the Space Needle and some great things, great restaurants. The fish market, the Pike Place market is always going to be a lot of fun, and I know a lot of tourists are going to check that out as well. So those are the starters for the National League and the American League in the 2023 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. All right, before we go to break, just to kind of continue with the All-Star festivities, the Home Run Derby, it's going to be fun. We got Julio Rodriguez representing the Seattle Mariners. We've also got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from the Toronto Blue Jays. And now you can add Mookie Betts from the Los Angeles Dodgers. Those are just some of the gentlemen that will take part in this year's Home Run Derby. So it's going to be a lot more names that will come about as time goes on. But right now, those are the gentlemen that are going to highlight this year's Home Run Derby. So again, that's Julio Rodriguez from the Seattle Mariners, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., from the Toronto Blue Jays, and of course we have Mookie Betts representing the Los Angeles Dodgers. Also, a couple of notes to pass along in talking about the New York Yankees. Aaron Judge tore a ligament in his right big toe, still experiencing some pain. However, he's getting close to a return. He's not fully announced when he's going to be coming back. We don't know if he'll be back maybe several days before the All-Star break. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but he has been playing catch. And baseball, he's been having some baseball activity since the toe injury. So, again, Aaron's been pretty tight-lipped in terms of his return, but it's good to know that, again, he's out and trying to get back on track in terms of helping the Yankees continue their success as well. And certainly, man, it's a bad time having one of the great players of all time, a future Hall of Famer in Aaron Judge. And also some better news to pass along to you in the world of baseball, specifically with the New York Yankees. Congratulations to pitcher Domingo Germán for pitching the 24th perfect game in Major League Baseball history. Matter of fact, this is the first perfect game that's been pitched in Major League Baseball since Felix Hernandez from the Seattle Mariners did it on August 15th, 2012. So, man, again, congratulations to Domingo Germán for pitching the 24th perfect game in Major League Baseball history. And also the first player from the Dominican Republic to do this as well. So there have been a lot of great players, a lot of great pitchers from the Dominican Republic, but Domingo Germán becoming the first one to pitch a perfect game, and certainly he did it on June the 28th of 2023, going up against the Oakland Athletics, and certainly somebody that has had his troubles, but trying to get back on the mend, and certainly, again, congratulations to him on that honor, Domingo Germán, pitching a no-hitter for the New York Yankees. All right, when we come back from the break, we'll give you the current league leaders and standings in Major League Baseball. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to Extra Base Hit.
Modern life is noisy. Noise is everywhere. Excessive noise is harmful, linked to sleep deprivation, hearing loss, and heart disease. Should noise be the price we pay for progress? Actually, no. Many noise sources have quieter options. Gas-powered landscaping equipment is obsolete, with battery-powered options greatly reducing noise and air pollution. Audible car alarms are obsolete, with vehicle immobilizers and GPS tracking providing silent anti-theft technologies. Quieter backup warning sounds are available, and adjustable directional sounds are less intrusive. So what can you do to reduce noise levels? Talk to store and building managers about safe sound levels. Work with elected officials and the police to strengthen noise enforcement. Join Noise Free America, a coalition to promote quiet.
Get on top of it before they do. Every 24 minutes, tipped furniture or a falling TV sends an injured child to the emergency room. Preventing tip-over incidents is easy, inexpensive, and only takes 5 minutes. Learn how to secure your furniture and TVs to protect children at anchorit.gov.
Hey, Sarah.
Oh, my gosh, he's so cute. How do you know him?
Come on, Donovan, do it like I taught you.
Love the new tattoo, Sarah.
Let's go!
What? Dude, that's Sarah. The girl in the pink shirt, that's the girl I was telling you about.
Oh, that's Sarah?
Theater 2 on your left. Hey, Sarah. What color underwear today?
Hey, Sarah, so when are you going to post something new?
Anything you post online, anyone can see. Family, friends.
See you later, Sarah.
Even not-so-friendly people. Think before you post.
Everybody, welcome back to the program. All right, so now it's time for the current. Let's look at the current league leaders in Major League Baseball. Let's start off with batting average. Currently, the league leading hitter in the major leagues is Luis Arias from the Miami Marlins. He's currently hitting at .392. At number two is Ronald Acuna Jr. from the Atlanta Braves. He's hitting .331. Coming in third is Freddie Freeman from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's hitting at .321. Coming in fourth is Bo Bichette from the Toronto Blue Jays. He's hitting at .319. And at number five is Yandy Diaz from the Tampa Bay Rays. He's hitting at .318. Next category is home runs. At number one, Shohei Ohtani from the Los Angeles Angels. He's hit 29 home runs. Two is Matt Olson from the Atlanta Braves. He's hit 26 home runs. At number three, Pete Alonso from the New York Mets. He has 24 home runs. At number four is Luis Robert Jr. from the Chicago White Sox. He has 23 home runs. And at number five, Kyle Schwarber from the Philadelphia Phillies. He has 21 home runs. Next category is RBIs, runs batted in. At number one, Shohei Ohtani from the Los Angeles Angels. He has 66 RBIs. It actually tied with Shohei for first place currently is Adalys Garcia from the Texas Rangers. He also has 66 RBIs. Coming in at number three, Matt Olson from the Atlanta Braves with 62 RBIs. At number four, Rafael Devers from the Boston Red Sox. He has 61 RBIs. And at number 5, Josh Naylor from the Cleveland Guardians with 58 RBIs. Next category is runs scored. At number 1, Ronald Acuña Jr. from the Atlanta Braves. He scored 71 runs. At number 2 is Marcus Semien from the Texas Rangers. He has 66 runs scored. At number 3, Freddie Freeman from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has 60 scored 64 runs. Also, his teammate Mookie Betts comes in at number 4. He scored 61 runs. And at number 5 is Kettle Marte from the Arizona Diamondbacks. He has scored 60 runs. Next category is stolen bases. At number 1, representing the Oakland A's, Esturi Ruiz, he's stolen 40 stolen bases. At number 2, Ronald Acuña Jr., he's stolen 36 bases. At number 3, from the Tampa Bay Rays, Juan DeFranco, he has stolen 25 bases. At number 4, Corbin Carroll from the Arizona Diamondbacks, he's stolen 24 bases. And at number 5, Bobby Witt Jr. from the Kansas City Royals, he's stolen 23 bases. Next category is hits. Coming in at number 1 from the Miami Marlins, Luis Arraez. He has 114 hits. At number 2, Bo Bichette from the Toronto Blue Jays. He has 110 hits. At number 3, Ronald Acuña Jr. with 107 hits. At number 4, Freddie Freeman with 102 hits. And at number 5, Marcus Semien. He has 98 hits. And the last category is on-base slugging percentage. At number 1, guess who? Shohei Ohtani, followed by at number 2, Ronald Acuña Jr. At number 3 is Freddie Freeman. At number 4, Luis Arraez. And at number 5 is Corbin Carroll. And that takes care of your offensive side. And let's move over. Or should I say that takes care of your offensive categories. And let's move over now to the pitching side. Currently, the league leader in Major League Baseball in wins is Shane McClanahan from the Tampa Bay Rays. He has 11 wins. Tied for second, we've had Zach Gallen from the Arizona Diamondbacks and Clayton Kershaw from the Los Angeles Dodgers. They both have 10 wins. And tied for fourth, we have Taijuan Walker from the Philadelphia Phillies and Merrill Kelly from the Arizona Diamondbacks. They both have 9 wins. Next category is saves. Tied for first, we have Emmanuel Clase from the Cleveland Guardians and Jordan Romano from the Toronto Blue Jays. They both have 24 saves. Coming in at number 3 is Camilo Duvall from the San Francisco Giants. He has 23 saves. At number 4, Alexis Diaz from the Cincinnati Reds. He has 22 saves. And at number 5, Felix Bautista from the Baltimore Orioles. He has 21 saves. Next category is ERA, earned run average. At number 1, Shane McClanahan. He has an ERA of 2.23. At number 2, Bryce Elder from the Atlanta Braves. He has an ERA of 2.44. At number 3, Marcus Stroman from the Chicago Cubs. He has an ERA of 2.47. At number 4, Framber Valdez from the Houston Astros. He has an ERA of 2.49. And at number 5, from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw. He has an ERA of 2.55. Next category is going to be strikeouts. At number 1, from the Atlanta Braves, Spencer Strider. He has 146 strikeouts. At number 2, Kevin Gausman from the Toronto Blue Jays. He has 139 strikeouts. At number 3, Shohei Ohtani, representing the Los Angeles Angels, with 127 strikeouts. At number 4, Pablo Lopez from the Minnesota Twins with 120. And at number 5 is Mitch Keller from the Pittsburgh Pirates. He has 108 outs. Next category is going to be innings pitched. At number 1, Logan Webb from the San Francisco Giants. He's pitched 110 innings. At number 2, Shane Bieber from the Cleveland Guardians. He's pitched 106 innings. At number 3, Aaron Nola from the Philadelphia Phillies. Coming in at number 4 is Nathan Eovaldi from the Texas Rangers. And at number 5, Mitch Keller from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Last category that we have is walks plus hits and innings pitched. At number 1, Tyler Wells from the Baltimore Orioles. At number 2, Joe Ryan from the Minnesota Twins. At number 3, Nathan Eovaldi from the Texas Rangers. At number 4, Zach Eflin from the Tampa Bay Rays. And at number 5, Shohei Ohtani. And that takes care of your offensive categories and pitching categories in Major League Baseball. All right, let's move over quickly to Major League Baseball standings. Let's start off in the American League. What a first half of the year it's been so far for the Tampa Bay Rays. They're currently in first place in the American League East with a record of 56 wins and 28 losses. Coming in at number two are the Baltimore Orioles with a record of 48 and 31. The Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees, are next with a record of 45 and 36. The Toronto Blue Jays are next with a record of 45 and 37. And the Boston Red Sox are last with a record of 40 and 42. Let's move over to the American League Central. The Minnesota Twins are currently in first place with a record of 40 and 42. The Cleveland Guardians are next with a record of 39 and 42. The Detroit Tigers are next with a record of 35 and 45. The Chicago White Sox are next with a record of 36 and 47. And then the Kansas City Royals are last with a record of 23 and 58. Last category that we have is the last division in the American League is the American League West. We have the Texas Rangers with a record of 49 and 32. The Houston Astros are next with a record of 44 and 37. The Los Angeles Angels are next with a record of 44 and 39. The Seattle Mariners are next with a record of 38 and 41. And in last place are the Oakland Athletics, the Oakland A's, with a record of 21 and 62. Let's move over now to the National League. Always a dogfight in this specific division in the National League East. Let's start off with the Atlanta Braves. They're currently the top dogs in the National League East with a record of 53 and 27, followed by the Miami Marlins with a record of 48 and 34. The Philadelphia Phillies are next with a record of 43 and 37. The New York Mets are next with a record of 36 and 45. And then in last place are the Washington Nationals with a record of 32 and 48. Next division is the National League Central. The Milwaukee Brewers and the Cincinnati Reds are both tied for first with a record of 43 and 38. Also currently tied for third place, the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chicago Cubs. They both have a record of 38 and 42. And in last place are the St. Louis Cardinals with a record of 33 and 47. And the last division that we have is the National League West. We have the Arizona Diamondbacks with a record of 48 and 34. The Los Angeles Dodgers are next with a record of 45 and 35. The San Francisco Giants are next with a record of 45 and 36. The San Diego Padres are next with a record of 37 and 44. And the Colorado Rockies are last with a record of 32 and 51. So that takes care of your Major League Baseball League leaders and your standings. And before we go to break, I want to say kudos to Major League Baseball for putting on a great series that they had. Specifically, it was the London series between the Chicago Cubs and the St. Louis Cardinals. Certainly, fans in London, they love their soccer. They love their tennis. They're grown to love basketball, and there's certainly the NFL has really grown on Londoners or people in the United Kingdom within the last decade and a half, almost two decades, and we're seeing that the growth of Major League Baseball is trying to grow strong overseas, specifically in the United Kingdom. So big ups to Major League Baseball for the London series that they had between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Chicago Cubs. All right, when we come back from the break, I have an interview with Ashley Curry. She's an actress, filmmaker, director, and producer from Gastonia, North Carolina. And she's also an actress and also the director and producer of the short film, Tony, Mamie, and Connie. The film tells the story of Toni Stone, Mamie Johnson, and Connie Morgan, who were three black women who played in the Negro Leagues during the early to mid-1950s. On the program, we discuss Curry's upbringing in North Carolina, her favorite Major League Baseball teams, also her familiarity with the Negro Leagues, and we also discussed the short film. Ashley is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to Extra Base Hit.
One box combo, please.
That's four juicy chicken fingers. We'll start cooking. Garlicky butter Texas toast tastes as good as it's looking. Fresh coleslaw and crispy fries you won't be skipping. And our secret cane sauce you want to keep dipping. Plus, our lemonade or iced tea made fresh today. Barney's. Yo, 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 here's your chicken to go.
Wow, that was fast.
Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love.
Ever notice what happens when your home is beautifully organized? You have more space, more room to breathe. At California Closets, our designers know just what questions to ask to create exactly what you want. Your personalized experience includes custom design and installation to deliver a result that truly reflects your style and needs. That's the California Closets difference. We call it practical magic. Book your free design consultation today at californiaclosets.com. When you look around your home, what makes you smile? Personal touches, beautiful light, lines, colors, things of quality that enhance your life. California Closets specializes in making space for what belongs, with richly textured finishes and quality materials that last. From the bedroom to the pantry to the mudroom, everything we do is custom designed, built, and installed by people who take pride in serving you. Think of it as practical magic. Book your free design consultation today at californiaclosets.com.
Albertsons is here to help you find the perfect way to celebrate mom. Grab one of our beautiful 18-stem rose bouquets for just $16.99. Enjoy all the fresh spring flavors from quality meats to the freshest seafood that can be steamed right here in store. Plus, our store teams are hand-dipping the freshest strawberries and delicious Belgian chocolate to make the day just a little sweeter. Come in or order online at Albertsons.com for delivery or curbside pickup. Albertsons, fresh foods, local flavors.
Running your own business means being ready for anything. And with the local bank that cares about local businesses, you will be. At Gulf Coast Bank & Trust, keeping your business accounts organized is a breeze with all the digital tools, convenience, and security you need, where, when, and how you need them. Get the most bank for your buck and your business. Visit gulfbank.com and let's make it happen.
This is what you're looking for.
Equal Housing and Equal Opportunity Lender. Member FDIC.
On February 13, 1920, Andrew Foster and fellow team owners came together to create the Negro National League. With the creation of the Negro National League, African Americans were excited to see people of color on the baseball field and setting great examples for the younger African American boys. One thing that was not accounted for was the presence of African American women playing baseball. With the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, shutting out African-American women with dreams to play baseball, three women created their own lane. This is a story of Toni Stone, Mamie Johnson, and Connie Morgan.
Connie, Mamie's talking to you.
I was saying, who thought we'd be here? I mean, playing ball with the guys, we got it.
Like your first tryout.
Yeah, time moves kind of slow when the white girls put you in your place, huh?
Excuse me? Where are you going?
Hi, I'm here for tryout.
We don't have tryouts for the cleaning ladies. You've got the job. Is there anything else?
I'm not here for the cleaning job. I'm here for the tryout for the baseball team.
Oh, you thought you could come try out. Did you better change those flyers? Yeah, we're not taking Negroes, so don't y'all have your own thing?
Yeah, that's for black men, not black women. Listen, I really want to play. I mean, I was with the police athletic club, and I was really known
for... Listen, we're not taking Negroes. We're very busy, so...
You can see yourself out? I mean, the nerve! She didn't give me a chance.
What did I tell you, Mamie? I knew this would happen.
So you don't have any faith in me?
I don't have faith in white people. I know this game. It don't play fair.
Jackie Robinson has a branch, Ricky. I need a branch, Ricky.
Where are you going to find yourself a white man to stake himself on you? Where, Mamie?
I don't know.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of Noel and Nora Productions. And the voice that you heard at the beginning was Ashley Curry, the director of the short film that she directed titled Toni, Mamie, and Connie, which is a short film documenting the three women that played in the Negro Leagues during the 1950s. And, of course, you heard a storyline that was all too familiar during those days, during the 1950s, as these three African-American women were trailblazers in playing in the Negro Leagues in the 1950s. To talk more about that project as well as other things related to Major League Baseball, Let's welcome her to the program. She's an actor, director, and filmmaker of the short film Tony, Mamie, and Connie. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome her to the program, Ashley Curry. Hello, Ashley. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you? I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. So before we get more into the short film that you directed, I want to start off with your upbringing in North Carolina. Where specifically did you grow up at in North Carolina, and what was your upbringing like?
Absolutely. I was born in Gastonia, North Carolina. If you don't know where that is, that's close to Charlotte, North Carolina. And my upbringing was pretty well. I have a couple of sisters. I have one brother and mom and dad, and we all had a pretty good childhood, of course. And then at that time, I was always interested in acting, always interested in theater, plays, film, TV. And so when I got to college, I went to UNC Chapel Hill. That's when I actually got a chance to be in a lot of the plays that I was able to take part in. And then, of course, it kind of got more into the film and TV aspect when I found my agent at KU Talent Agency in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then from there, it just kind of blossomed. And then I was able to branch out and see other people writing their own films and writing their own shows that were good friends of mine. And I thought, well, if they're able to do it, then why not I?
Awesome, absolutely. And why not you? I mean, everybody's voice deserves to be heard, and everybody's creativity is definitely welcome. And that's one of the beauties of the arts. It gives everyone different viewpoints and different vantage points on how to express themselves in more ways than one. And I want to stay just with your upbringing in North Carolina. As far as sports is concerned, North Carolina has been known as a state that prides itself on basketball, being so many great basketball players. But we know that football has also been popular in North Carolina as well. What about baseball? Is baseball received pretty well as basketball and football in North Carolina?
Yeah, well, to be honest, it's mostly basketball and football. I would say baseball, I didn't really get have an appreciation until I got much older. And North Carolina is mostly geared towards football and basketball. So I did play softball back when I was in middle school and earlier than that, but it was more so just going to the Boys and Girls Clubs and being able to play those team sports. But yeah, it was mostly just a basketball and football type of state.
All right, awesome. And I want to get now into your introduction to acting. You mentioned about going to college and really getting your feet wet into theater, and then later developing those skills and then getting into filmmaking. What was your introduction to acting like? Did it start in college, or was it earlier than that?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely earlier than that. But when I got into college, that's when I was really able to blossom, I would say. I met one of the great professors at Chapel Hill. Her name is Miss Kathy Perkins and Miss Catherine Hunter Williams. I was able to reach out to them, and they had a couple of plays that I would, of course, be interested in. I was a part of, it's pronounced God, but it's spelled G-A-A-D. So I was a part of that production at UNC. And then I was also a part of Tunnel of Oppression, which is just a series of monologues that you do just to talk about different oppression that we see. And it was there that I actually met my agent, and she pretty much said I was doing pretty well, but I would do better doing film and TV, and have I thought about doing that. And at the time, being someone from Gastonia, I didn't really think about it. And I thought it was honestly just she was playing a trick, pranking me. And I was able to meet her again, and that's when we were able to just connect the dots, and she's now my agent. So that's really where it started, is in Chapel Hill.
Awesome. And, of course, that training, and, of course, early on, and then, of course, to continue to develop and foster those talents going into college, that set you up for what you currently do. And we're going to get more into Tony, Mamie, and Connie, the short film that you directed and produced in just a little bit. But I want to transition now into baseball, specifically Major League Baseball. Did you have any favorite Major League Baseball teams growing up?
Yeah, being so close to Georgia, to Atlanta, I would have to say the Atlanta Braves was definitely my favorite. And that's where we would go sometimes over the weekend and go to a game every once in a while. So definitely the Braves.
I want to get now into another experience that's been valuable, not just for Black people, but just in really in all of society. And people are still trying to get the historical nature and the references from the Negro Leagues. I wanted to ask you, this is a two-part question. Where did your knowledge of the Negro Leagues come from? Did it come from family members or friends or doing research? And what were some of the amazing things that you learned from the Negro Leagues?
Say, I really learned a lot from my grandmother. She would tell me lots of things that happened during her time and how excited she was to go and see those games and things of that nature. So a lot of my knowledge of the Negro Leagues happened with my grandmother. And it didn't really blossom from there. Of course, I learned it in school, but there's so much stuff that we don't know that is oftentimes left out. And that's the thing here is that once I got out of school, I began to see things and hear things and do a lot of research. And that actually took me to, you know, actually go on my own research at times. And that's how I found out about the three ladies. Because, of course, you know about Hank Aaron. You know about Jackie Robinson. You know about Satchel Paige. You know about all these individuals. But there are a lot of people who are in the background that we don't know about. And so I believe, you know, of course, in schools we're taught about it. We go through it every year. Black History Month, we talk about different figures that are there, and they are great in their ways as well. But there are also people who we don't know about that go hidden, and we don't know about them. And a lot of people kind of just think, oh, it's just these specific people. No, it's a lot of people that are out there that we don't know about that we may see every day, or we may, you know, think about their story and say, oh, wow, I didn't know that this person was actually in the Negro League. But it's things like that, and that's the reason why I wanted to do this film, is to be able to bring awareness. There are so many hidden figures that we don't know, that we just would never know if we don't do the research and we don't look into it.
I wanted to continue just talking more about the Negro Leagues. You mentioned that you learned about the history of the Negro Leagues through your grandmother. Did she tell you about a lot of the teams that were in the Negro League, and if so, what were those teams?
Yeah, so I know about the Black Hornets. I know about the Clowns. I remember her telling me a lot about the Kansas City. I remember those are the specific, and I believe the Birmingham, I just can't think of the title or their mascot. But I know specifically she would tell me about the Indianapolis Clowns, and she would just mention a lot of the different people that of course were playing there. So a lot of those names and the mascots and the individuals were all being taught to me by my grandmother at a very young age. And then when I got older and was in school, of course, that's when I was able to kind of put the pieces together.
You definitely were able to put the pieces together for this short film that you directed, produced, and starred in, called Tony, Mamie, and Connie. And it details these three African-American women, these trailblazers that played in the Negro Leagues during the 1950s, Toni Stone, Mamie Johnson, and Connie Morgan. Just tell the listeners out there just what Tony, Mamie, and Connie is all about, and what did you learn about this during the research for this short film?
Yeah, so well, first the film is about these three ladies, and it goes back from their background, of course, when they were coming up. And a lot of times I would piece those together between their childhood and then now. So the current state or the current, the scene in the movie that we kind of bounce back and forth between is now where they're actually facing or they're playing their last game as a clown. And so it goes back. And it has different moments where it looks back into each lady's childhood. And it just tells you how much they were able to overcome their obstacles and overcome even family members telling them, hey, I don't think this is a good idea. I think you should be doing this. Because during that time, of course, women didn't play baseball. They didn't, you know, do what they were not supposed to do as it, you know, pertains to their husbands. They did what was expected of them. And these ladies did that, but then they also were able to live out their dreams. So it goes back and forth between that time in their lives. The research process was a lot of reading. I did a lot of reading. Martha Ackman, I believe, is her name. She has a book on Toni Stone, and it also features a little bit about Mamie Johnson and Connie Morgan as well. Pictures of that time when they were, of course, in the league, and it also tells about their time after, what actually happened after they, you know, retired from baseball. So I use that, and I also, there was also a play, Toni Stone, that was also, I look forward to, reached out to the person who played Toni Stone to get a lot of insight from her. There's a play also, Mamie's Right Arm, or A Good Right Arm. I read that book, that's about Mamie Johnson and how she kind of overcame her obstacles growing up in the South and moving to D.C. and moving this way and that way and then being able to have that dream and to accomplish her dream. So it took a lot of different books that I read, researching online as well, to be able to pull those elements together and then come up with the script.
Wow, that's amazing how you were able to connect the dots and put this project together. I want to stay with the short film for a moment. Doing research and just preparing for the interview, there was mentioning of Women's Professional Baseball League that started during World War II, and there was a movie that was loosely based on this back in the 90s, A League of Their Own, which is one of my favorite movies of all time with Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, and Gina Davis. And what was also mentioned at the beginning was that these women, well, black women to be exact, were not allowed to play in this league because it was predominantly white. Did you dive deep into what happened as a result of not just Toni, Mamie, and Connie, but other black women that were talented in baseball and not being allowed to play in this other professional baseball league?
Yeah, absolutely. I do know that there were other women that wanted to try out as well, and they were told the same thing, hey, you can't try out because, you know, you are not white. The only one that I was able to see and able to find in research was that Mamie was the only one that took it a step further and said, okay, well, if I can't play with the white women, what about the black men? I know that I'm not able to do it in this capacity, but nobody's ever tried to. Or Toni Stone was the one who was actually, you know, doing it before Mamie was. But she thought, I'm going to take it a step further and not let this denial get me down and to essentially take on the guys. And so she didn't stop there. And of course, with Toni Stone being in there as well, being playing baseball as well, that was looked at as motivation for her to do so. So being able to see that she was there, that's what made me feel like, okay, I can do it too. And then Connie came after Mamie because she saw the ladies and she was very excited and wanted to do what they were doing as well. So it wasn't a situation where one person was able to be on the team and they said, well, nobody else, I'm not going to help anybody else. I'm going to be the only woman to be on the Negro League baseball team. No, these ladies helped each other up the ladder to be able to get what they needed to do and they wanted to accomplish their dreams. So with Mamie, yeah, she was the only one that tried out for the team, for the All-American baseball team, Girls Baseball League, but that didn't stop her there. Normally, the ladies would just stop there and say, okay, well, maybe this isn't what I should do. Mamie took it a step further to say, well, if I can't play with the white women, I'll be able to play with the black men.
Okay, and I want to stay, again, just with these women and specifically with the Negro Leagues. Who was the commissioner and the president of the Negro Leagues at that time?
Good question. So the commissioner at that time, I believe, was Andrew Rue Foster. So what happened was he actually, him and a couple other, the team owners, they came together to create the, well, they, at first it was called the Negro National League, which is, that was in the 20s. But what happened was, so Toni Stone was the first lady to be able to, I would say, break the barrier on the Negro League team. And what happened was she would actually be playing baseball, not professionally, just, of course, recreationally around the community. And she got so good that there was Sid Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K. He was one of the ones that saw her playing. Oh, wow, she's really, really good. I've never seen a woman play like that before. And Toni Stone, being who she is, she continued to play until Sid reached out to her and to her husband and said, wow, you're amazing at what you do. Would you be able to play for this team? And, you know, we'll give you an audition or a tryout to be able to see how this works, and then we can take it from there. Well, she ended up taking, or Hank Aaron was on the team. She took his spot because, of course, he went on to be in the major leagues. But she took his spot. So that tells you right there how well she was able to do it and how well she was able to kind of get into the team and fill that need. So at that time, she was pretty much picked on to be selected to even try out. And it was white men that saw her and that said, okay, let's see how she'll do being with the men to be able to play baseball. And she did well. Same goes for Mamie Johnson as well. They were all in that same era of time, I want to say 55, 56, where they were being looked at and they were able to play for that team.
I want to stay just with these three women for a moment. What were the teams that they played for during their time in the Negro Leagues?
So for Connie Morgan, she stayed with the Indianapolis Clowns, and that was the only team that she played for. She played for about a year before she retired. And the same is true for Mamie Johnson. She stayed with that team, of course, until that amount of time, and she didn't move to different teams. Now, the only thing different was Toni Stone. At that point in time, Toni Stone and Mamie Johnson were both on the same team for a year, but she was actually the only one that moved to Kansas City or was traded to Kansas City. And that was, I'll say, 55, 56 when she was sent to Kansas City. And then Mamie was still on the team for the Clowns. So those are the only two teams that Toni Stone was on. And then, of course, after she pretty much retired after that, and she went back to take care of her husband.
During the making of this short film, what were some of the challenges that they had endure in terms of traveling? Because, of course, we know during that period of time, racism, segregation was still alive and well. So what were the challenges that they had to face, not just in terms of racism and segregation, but also in terms of the treatment from not just being respected in the league, but even being respected amongst their male counterparts?
Yeah, that was a pretty big obstacle to overcome, I'll say, because these women, like you said, they're not only dealing with racism, but they're dealing with sexism as well. So, of course, when they were going into different cities, they had to be careful and be careful that they're not doing anything to offend anyone, because during that time, even walking down a particular street or whistling or whatnot could be a downfall. And so they had to make sure that they were always with someone that they trusted, and that could be a member of the team that they, you know, really felt as though they had like a brotherly friendship with. But not only that, but they couldn't bring their husbands, of course, because their husbands had to work. And so a lot of the times they leaned on each other to be able to say, okay, well, I know that you'll have my back if something were to happen. And, of course, they had to deal with the sexism from their counterparts. A lot of the men that were on the team when Toni Stone was there didn't really like that she was taking Hank Aaron's place, because they thought, I can do better than that. This is a woman. She's never done this before. We've never seen her play. This is her first, you know, team that she's actually on that's official. So why does she get to take his place? And so there was a lot that she had to show to be able to show up for her teammates and to be able to get to gain their trust. Because essentially that's all baseball is trusting your teammate that if you're covering first base, you're covering second base, you know that if something were to happen, anybody, you know, were to hit, you're able to catch the ball to be able to call them out or to be able to mark them as out. So it's all about a game of trust, and that's what it boiled down to. Of course, at the beginning, there were hardships. There were obstacles in their way for their teammates and for the managers and the owners and things of that nature, and a lot that they had to go through as well. These ladies had families. These ladies had husbands. So I'm sure there was a lot of conflict with that as well. But they still knew, okay, this is something that will be phenomenal and great for our, not only just the race, but our, you know, as women. People will be able to look back and see that I can do it. I can do this particular sport, you know, just because these ladies are able to do it at that time. So we tried to play a little bit on that tension with the players and their male counterparts in the film. There were a couple of scenes where it was a lot of back and forth between Mamie and the other teammates and then Tony and the other teammates. But essentially, there has to be a level of trust that these ladies have to establish their teammates, and they have to understand that they're there for a reason and that they were able to stand in that position because they got there on their own merit.
You mentioned about these ladies having responsibilities such as families and also husbands. And one of the storylines that was intriguing in the movie that I mentioned earlier, A League of Their Own, it was set during the mid to late 40s. That's when the league had peaked during that period of time. And that was so significant because, again, World War II was at its peak, and there were a lot of men that were overseas representing their country proudly. And the league folded when the war ended. When they played in the Negro Leagues during the 50s, this was post-World War II. Did you have an opportunity to delve deep in the film in terms of the post-World War II when the Negro Leagues were waning a bit and for the women that were playing in the Negro Leagues?
Yeah, so pretty much what we were able to do, again, with it being a short film, we're not able to expound on a lot as of right now. That's on the table for the feature film that we have, that we're trying to get a script together for now. With the short film, it's just the concept to be able to let people see where we're trying to go with it. So that way, when we do get to the feature film, we're able to play on those, just playing with that idea and being able to see that this was a reality for the ladies. So hopefully in the feature film, we're able to play on that.
I want to transition into mental health. Mental health has been a topic that's been talked about for a very long time now, and it's becoming more into the forefront in the Black community, whether it be with Black men or Black women. Mental health was something that they had to endure in terms of the racism and the segregation and just fighting their way to be respected as baseball players and as human beings. Were there any lasting impacts or any repercussions that these women faced as you delve deep into your research and preparing for the short film in terms of dealing with mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's just even take into consideration being told no, and you know that you're capable of doing a position. That's something that even myself, it kind of takes a hit on your self-esteem. So I know for me, preparing for the role of Mamie Johnson, I was able to see a lot of her interviews that she did give, and she was able to speak on a lot of how she felt during that time. I'm sure it definitely, you know, affected their self-esteem and their mental health as well. Because, of course, during that time, a lot of it was you couldn't say exactly what you wanted to say because you don't know how that's going to affect how you are able to move in the future. So a lot of what Mamie Johnson did, she said, I didn't talk a lot, but I performed. And what that means is she didn't really say too much at that time. She just let the game speak for herself. And so if she had people in the crowd or people on the other side saying this and saying that, of course that kind of gets you down. Because, again, these women are human. That's the basic thing that I want people to understand watching this film is, yes, they were courageous and they're heroes and, you know, Hidden Figures, and we definitely need to hear their story. But they were all still human. So I'm sure hearing no all the time because of the color of your skin and, you know, getting that same treatment from black men and saying, you know, oh, you don't need to do this, you need to be at home, that definitely does something to you. But again, for that time period, they weren't able to verbalize it as we're able to do so now. And so, of course, like I said, these ladies are human, and I'm sure that it did get them down, but they didn't let it stop them. They still were motivated enough to, of course, be able to be a beacon of hope for the women in the community, to be able to say, yes, I have a family, I have this going on, I have that going on, but I still want to be able to live out my dreams.
Doing the research and developing this project, what did you learn about pay, or should I say how their contracts were structured during their time playing in the Negro Leagues?
So from the books that I was able to read, specifically Martha Ackman's book, they were just happy that they were being paid. That's essentially it. They didn't care about this is where you are going to have and this is the amount. They didn't care about any of that. The fact that they were going to get paid to do what they loved, that was just more than anything what they wanted to accomplish. Because at that time, Toni Stone, she wasn't really getting paid to play baseball at that time. She was just playing it to have fun. And so if you're telling her now that you're able to play baseball, but not only play baseball, but you can get paid from doing this, and you don't have to have a second job, third job, fourth job, that was just more than anything to these women, specifically Toni Stone.
Again, that's the short film directed, produced, and starring in it is Ashley Curry, and the name of the short film is called Toni, Mamie, and Connie. Again, thank you so much, Ashley, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media. Any websites, let the listeners know that as well. And also, where can they view the short film, Toni, Mamie, and Connie?
Yeah, so right now we have the film. It is on our YouTube page. If you search Noelle and Noah Productions, it is on our YouTube page. You can find our YouTube by following us on Facebook. It is Toni, Mamie, Connie, simply put, or on Instagram as @toni.mamie.connie. And once you reach out to our Instagram, you'll be able to see a link there that takes you to our YouTube. And then, of course, if you want to follow myself, my Instagram is Ashley, my first name, B. Gilliam. And that, of course, will take you to see there any updates that we have regarding the film, especially as it pertains to making this into a feature film.
Awesome. And you heard it from her again. She's Ashley Curry. She's a director, actor, and a filmmaker who directed the short film Toni, Mamie, and Connie, which tells the story of three black women that played in the Negro League in the 1950s. Ashley, thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. If ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be back with more right after this.
On February 13, 1920, Andrew Foster and fellow team owners came together to create the Negro National League. With the creation of the Negro National League, African Americans were excited to see people of color on the baseball field and setting great examples for the younger African American boys. One thing that was not accounted for was the presence of African American women playing baseball. With the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League shutting out African-American women with dreams to play baseball, three women created their own lane. This is a story of Toni Stone, Mamie Johnson, and Connie Morgan.
Connie, Mamie's talking to you.
I was saying, who thought we'd be here? I mean, playing ball with the guys, we got it.
Like your first tryout.
Yeah, time moves kind of slow when a white girl puts you in your place, huh?
Excuse me? Where are you going?
Hi, I'm here for tryout.
We don't have tryouts for the cleaning ladies.
you've got the job. Is there anything else?
I'm not here for the cleaning job. I'm here for the tryout for the baseball team.
Oh, you thought you could come try out. Did you better change those flyers? Yeah, we're not taking Negroes, so don't y'all have your own thing?
Yeah, that's for black men, not black women. Listen, I really want to play. I mean, I was with the police athletic club, and I was really known.
Listen, we're not taking Negroes. We're very busy, so
you can see yourself out? I mean, the nerve. She didn't give me a chance.
What did I tell you, Mamie? I knew this would happen.
So you don't have any faith in me?
I don't have faith in white people. I know this game. It don't play fair.
Jackie Robinson has a branch, Ricky. I need a branch, Ricky.
Where are you going to find yourself a white man to stake himself on you?
When you look around your home, what makes you smile? Personal touches? Beautiful light, lines, colors. Things of quality that enhance your life. California Closets specializes in making space for what belongs, with richly textured finishes and quality materials that last. From the bedroom to the pantry to the mudroom, everything we do is custom designed, built, and installed by people who take pride in serving you. Think of it as practical magic. Book your free design consultation today at californiaclosets.com.
Albertsons is here to help you find the perfect way to celebrate mom. Grab one of our beautiful 18-stem rose bouquets for just $16.99. Enjoy all the fresh spring flavors from quality meats to the freshest seafood that can be steamed right here in store. Plus, our store teams are hand-dipping the freshest strawberries and delicious Belgian chocolate to make the day just a little sweeter. Come in or order online at Albertsons.com for delivery or curbside pickup. Albertsons, fresh foods, local flavors.
The new Chevy Silverado HD puts you in command. Own strength with its enhanced available Duramax 6.6-liter turbo diesel V8. Own the lake with its available advanced towing technology. And own technology with an available 13.4-inch diagonal touchscreen. The new Chevy Silverado HD. Own work, own play, own life. Learn more at Chevy.com. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Where, Mamie?
I don't know.
Ever notice what happens when your home is beautifully organized? You have more space, more room to breathe. At California Closets, our designers know just what questions to ask to create exactly what you want. Your personalized experience includes custom design and installation to deliver a result that truly reflects your style and needs. That's the California Closets difference. We call it practical magic. Book your free design consultation today at californiaclosets.com.
Albertsons is here to help you find the perfect way to celebrate mom. Grab one of our beautiful 18-stem rose bouquets for just $16.99. Enjoy all the fresh spring flavors from quality meats to the freshest seafood that can be steamed right here in store. Plus, our store teams are hand-dipping the freshest strawberries and delicious Belgian chocolate to make the day just a little sweeter. Come in or order online at Albertsons.com for delivery or curbside pickup. Albertsons, fresh foods, local flavors.
Did you know Discount Tire offers free tire safety inspections and air checks? Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Stop by our location in Denham Springs at 1700 South Range Avenue. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Ever notice what happens when your home is beautifully organized? You have more space, more room to breathe. At California Closets, our designers know just what questions to ask to create exactly what you want. Your personalized experience includes custom design and installation to deliver a result that truly reflects your style and needs. That's the California Closets difference. We call it practical magic. Book your free design consultation today at californiaclosets.com.
Albertsons is here to help you find the perfect way to celebrate mom. Grab one of our beautiful 18-stem rose bouquets for just $16.99. Enjoy all the fresh spring flavors from quality meats to the freshest seafood that can be steamed right here in store. Plus, our store teams are hand-dipping the freshest strawberries and delicious Belgian chocolate to make the day just a little sweeter. Come in or order online at Albertsons.com for delivery or curbside pickup. Albertsons, fresh foods, local flavors.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Extra Base Hit. Once again, a big special thank you to Ashley Curry, actress, filmmaker, director, and producer, and also an actor in the short film that she directed and produced, Tony, Mamie, and Connie, which tells the story of three black women who played in the Negro Leagues during the early to mid-1950s. Again, a big special thank you to Ashley. Until next time, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson saying so long, and you've been listening to Extra Base Hit.